Lake Effect brings you conversations about what's happening in Milwaukee and the people, places, and organizations that shape the community. This is Lake Effect Spotlight from WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.
Tomorrow, UW-Milwaukee's School of Continuing Education will host a conference on trauma and reimagining solutions for healing. One area of focus is intergenerational trauma and how Indigenous people are affected by colonization, loss of language and culture, and displacement. Maren Denning, an adjunct lecturer at UWM, will be one of the presenters. He'll explore how connecting to traditional Native American practices can help heal trauma. Ahead of tomorrow's conference, he joins Lake Effect's Joy Powers.
When we are talking about trauma in the Anishinaabe community and the Native community more generally, what are some of the sources of this trauma?
One of the most interesting aspects about trauma in our community is that it's everywhere. And it's so regular in its presence that we don't even know it's there. For a lot of our parents and grandparents, and of course the people before that, our boarding school generations, we can point to one of those as a source, where children were separated from parents, either by force or by necessity. There were no parenting role models. And so when these children were going through boarding schools, they were exposed to a lot of things children shouldn't be exposed to. And that shaped their life. They didn't have parents interacting with themselves. They thought that what they were going through, things like sexual abuse, isolation, corporal punishment, that that was all normal. And that changed our entire society. There was like a cut between what we knew to be as parents into a new model of this is how we behave with each other. And when we enter those places, for a lot of our elders, for a lot of those folks who went through it, it's very much about, I'm going to be quiet about it. You don't talk about it. It's impolite. It's not places that we speak about. So it's hidden. And these sorts of patterns of behavior began to replicate themselves in our homes. And that pattern with silence meant that this trauma that was building, or historic trauma, would redouble. And of course, we now know that historic trauma can be passed down in the DNA of children. So not only are we being exposed to it as we're growing up without any words, but there's also an inheritance through DNA that this trauma becomes so normalized that we think it's a part of everyday life and that this is what it is to be normal, when in fact it wasn't.
Yeah. To take a step back, when we think about intergenerational trauma, how does that manifest itself in our Native communities? What does that look like today?
There are so many examples in our communities about what historic trauma looks like. And for me, and what became normalized for me, let's take, for example, the idea of young people and the loss of life. Let's look at our older people and the loss of life. Most recent example would be our pandemic. When we looked at that, we know that right here in Milwaukee, Native Americans were number two in transmission and number one in fatality. What that translates to is young people not just losing one grandparent or one aunt or one uncle, but a multitude of them. And for a young person going through these traumas over and over and over again in short periods of time, it affects their behavior, it affects their attitudes, it affects grades in school. Trauma affects how we see ourselves, how we interact with each other. It also affects, again, what we see as what's normal, when in fact we know it's abnormal behavior. It's not positive or building behavior that trauma can induce. It's evidenced in so many ways, and I would use myself as an example. I had three children. All of them left this world before me in ways that were traumatic for me. What was interesting in the beginning of that process after losing the first one, what would happen to me is I would be in stores and I would not be present. I would dissociate. I would put people at arm's length. I wouldn't engage in life. I slept on a floor, on a rug with nothing on the walls for almost 2 years. And to me, it's just kind of what you did. It's part of a healing process. It is, but there's other ways to go about it. Those ways were brought to me by other Indigenous people, especially our veterans who had been through post-traumatic stress and brought to me ways that they had learned from military or from other people to say, this is how you can get through what you've been through. Because it wasn't just the loss of our children. It was also going back generations. So for me, I could look at these patterns of trauma being passed down to my children. But our family is so like other Native families, the example. I had a teenage mom. My father was killed before I was born. In our own family, in the generation before her, we had a grandfather who was taken to a boarding school with his sister. His sister died at the boarding school. Where is she buried? Why didn't he come home after his boarding school experience until his mother died? Those are traumatic events for young people, and there's an inheritance that goes from one family to another, and even beyond that, because our Native folks that were on reservations, and certainly our families are still there, there can be places of great impoverishment of emotion. The spirit of loneliness is there because it's just, this is what it is to be who we are. But to be who we are is so much more. And there's so many amazing things that we need to embrace. And that kind of goes to that question of what happens when things happen, like me losing our children.
One of the big parts of your work is inviting people to reconnect with their own history. How do you open up that conversation? How do you open up the idea of reconnecting with your Anishinaabe ancestors as a way of moving forward?
There's a lot of different pathways because trauma is and takes different forms. It takes it differently for every person that it affects. So the path of healing for someone will always be different. And it's usually not a straight path towards healing. I've done this thing and now I'm moving forward. So for example, to reconnect with culture, to find ways of healing and to move through the things that have harmed us in our life. We can look at regaining our languages, which is a very large and amazing movement in Indian country right now. So people learning language, learning to understand the world differently than what it teaches us, individualism would be an example. When we learn about individualism as a social construct, meaning I'm responsible for myself, I alone am moving into my future, there's another point of view that says we're doing this together and we do things as a community. I'm never alone. I'm always surrounded by this great world, all of what nature is and what she does for us. I'm surrounded by relatives and people that love me. And no matter what I go through, I'm never alone. Even though I may feel that way, there's things that I can connect with. So language can take constructs of individuality and create something like action, movement, flow, learning our water ceremonies, learning about sweat lodges, learning about our songs, learning about smudging, for example, using medicines to help center us, using different avenues to connect with our minds, our bodies, and our spirits. There's a multitude of ways to do that. And each of us in our cultures have different ways to do it. For many of our people, part of the trauma and that vicious cycle of trauma is that in that boarding school experience, many of our tribal ways that can save us were taken away. And many of those experiences where it's been taken away was taken away to such a degree, a person is no longer connected to those ways. So they're trying to find a way to reconnect. And that's where institutions and individuals step forward, like our veterans did for me, and say, there's another way to live. And we're going to give you some ideas of how to do that. And a lot of times for many of us, it's experimenting. For some, it's they find value in singing. For some of us, it could be our tribal dances. For others, it could be finding it in reading and learning more about our culture and having that quiet time alone from everything else. It could be taking a walk in areas that you find peaceful and safe to center yourself and to regain from a moment of manic thoughts where self-harm and the idea of taking one's own life, completing suicide, is a part of your being. It becomes so hardwired in those areas of trauma that it takes work and time and practice and dedication to regain it. I know that when I was in my deepest despair, we had some of our elders come to me and they would say, you need to take what you have inside of you to the earth. She will understand you. The earth has a memory. The earth has her own language in her own way. And you need to connect with her and get back with her because it's from her that you've come. It might be that in a moment of my life, that could have been falling on deaf ears. But the moment that advice came to me and the things that I did to do those things in a very tribally specific way was helpful, life-changing, and life-saving for me.
It's interesting what you say about, you know, individualizing this a bit and really seeing what the person needs to move forward. When you think about your work and your talks, what are you hoping people take away from it?
The one thing that I want them to take away is that they're not alone. And that's easy to say, and we hear a lot of counselors and other people talk about, you know, that you're not alone, and we see these advertisements for it. But that is a really difficult message to propose and to get out there to people who see themselves as individuals, who buy into the idea that my future is up to me and only me. Essentially, what's being said there is I alone am responsible for my healing. And I've heard many counselors enter into that. And again, that works for some people. They grew up in an individualist culture. It's like they've heard that message. It's consistent with what they've heard. And they move towards it in a powerful way, and it's helpful. Yet other people, the message of individualism is, I am an individual and I am alone. And at the end of the day, there's no one else. When people are walking out of the room after they hear me talk, I want them to embrace this idea that we are in this together. No matter where we are from, no matter where we're born, no matter the destination, we're surrounded by love, we're surrounded by people that want good things for us. And that we position ourselves to be around people that know how to do this. We exist as a group and we succeed and rise and fall as groups. Yes, there's individuals and what we accomplish within it, but that's a part of this larger collective story. And that is one of the more interesting teachings that I've received from one of my elders. And it was this: we have this force within our life, just like our teachings, and they're positive and they're helpful. Love and bravery and truth and honesty and humility and all wisdom, all of these amazing things. But the teaching was there's an opposite spirit to that. And just as there is an opposite spirit to the all of us doing well and being well together, there's that opposite spirit that lives with the destroyer. A force so powerful that it has us sometimes lose our own minds, our own balance. And the helper to that is a spirit of loneliness. And so there's a lot of people that when they hear me talk, they're in that very place where they can't see anything. Their mom or dad might be in the next room. Their best friend might be just a text away or a phone call away. But they're feeling so alone that nobody understands that the world has a different view of things and that their look at the world is something that is only theirs and they see no path to the future. That can be a cannibalizing thing for us once we get that set in our minds. What we need to do is remember there are other ways. And when Native people move towards our ways and our traditions, they will see the us, they will see the ours, they will see the people that care. And those people that care aren't just human beings. They're this natural world that is around us. When we walk out, when we see a moon in its full and in its brightness, or when it's covered, but she's always there, always there. When we walk on the earth, do we listen to her sounds? Do we center ourselves and know that all around us are things that can help us? These were the kinds of things that were taken from us and through no fault of our own have been forgotten by many of our people. But that door and pathway for all of us to learn these things, not just Indigenous people, but other people that know that they're there for them to help them, is a doorway that many of us should go through when we're so in a place where we're not open to much of anything. Sometimes it's like reaching back to that ancestral voice that existed before these traumatic things happened.
Beautifully said. Well, Marin, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect.
Awesome. Thank you.
Marin Denning is an adjunct lecturer at UWM, and he joined Lake Effect's Joy Powers. The Trauma in Our Community Conference is happening tomorrow at UWM's School of Continuing Education, both in person and online.
You can find more interviews like this one by visiting wuwm.com/lakeeffect. And while you're there, subscribe to the Lake Effect Spotlight podcast.